Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about the Grand Budapest Hotel and the Lunchbox. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Good evening, all.
Hello.
Hello.
Third podcast in a row. And we never spoke about the Muggies.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
We did have our 2013. I didn't know whether to call them 2013 or 2014 awards. So I called them 2013 because, you know, they were for 2013 movies. But
One of the blogs I read most often, The Film Experience, this is their pet peeve. They do the same thing with the Oscars. So Lupita Nyong'o, did she win the 2013 Oscars or the 2014 Oscars?
2013.
But everybody keeps calling it the 2014 Oscars. It should be 2013.
I know.
It should be, because they are being recognized for the work done in 2013.
Correct.
But IMDb is to fault, because IMDb lists all the Oscars in the year in which the actual ceremony occurred and not for the year in which they're being celebrated. So it's caused this big confusion on the internet.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So I was right then. I stuck with 2013. Well, actually, I debated with Rashmi yesterday. Sorry, you didn't get a chance to weigh in on this, but I was trying to post the post. But yeah, our big winner was 12 Years a Slave, which I don't think was undeserved. I think that was the unanimous choice between all of us. The only one that we actually all agreed on as a category, I think, was Michael Fassbender, who won his second Muggy. Because two years in a row, yeah.
So does that mean if he rings us, he gets two mugs?
He does get two mugs. If he rings us and he comes on the show, he can get three if he wants.
I'd give him six.
Hey.
I'd say make him work.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I'm just kidding.
I was actually, can we just give the story of South by Southwest, not to go on about South by Southwest. So we watched a film called Frank, which we're going to talk about. And it's a film that came out of Sundance. It's showing around the film circuit. Very good film. Basically, Michael Fassbender wears this strange mask throughout the film. He's this character who doesn't show his face. He always wears a mask. And I was really excited because we actually ended up getting there. You know, we waited for hours, got there late. We ended up in the first two rows of the cinema. And I was super excited because normally they bring on the you know, cast and crew. And I looked at Joe and I said, Michael Fassbender's my free pass. And I was so disappointed because he didn't turn up.
He didn't show up.
Of course, I would have jumped the stage. Anyway, Michael Fassbender, if you're listening, you can have any number of Muggies you like.
I do personally believe he might be the best actor working right now. And that's not faint praise. I mean, there's so many amazing actors, but he might be at the top of the fall.
His range and
fearlessness.
Manliness.
We gave it to him last year for Prometheus, which I don't think anyone else really recognized. But
yeah,
he was the only one on all three of our lists that were in the category of best supporting. So, just quickly, the other winners were best director Steve McQueen, best actor Robert Redford for All Is Lost, which is a movie that I think we all liked a lot. But I think we all recognize the performance that we feel like the Academy didn't even nominate. So, he gets redemption there from the movie Wallers. Best female actor was Cate Blanchett for Blue Jasmine. Best supporting, we've already mentioned. Female, we agreed with the Academy with Lupita Nyong'o. Cinematography was Gravity. And we didn't give Gravity a lot of love in any of the other categories, but cinematography, I think, was well-deserved. And best doc was Blackfish. So congratulations to all of those Muggy winners. If you haven't claimed your Muggy yet, do write into mail@movieworldhouse.com and we will happily send you your mug, your Movie Rollers logo mug. So please take advantage of that.
Yes, Cate Blanchett. Are you listening?
All right. Well, let's talk about...
Or we could say, hello, Governor Lupita Nyong'o. Would you like your mug?
So nobody else gets that, Rashmi. That's a reference to our last podcast where we were talking about the movie Nonstop, and Rashmi couldn't get over Lupita Nyong'o's Cockney accent.
Really bad. Okay.
It was a good...
But she had all of four lines in the movie.
Yeah, okay. Anyway.
Get over it. All right, well, let's talk about our movies for this week. We have Grand Budapest Hotel and The Lunchbox. Which one do you want to start with first?
Grand Budapest.
Go for it.
So Wes Anderson fans, rev up your motorbikes. Not the most prolific filmmaker. We have now 2 films from him in 2 years flat. He follows up Moonrise Kingdom from last year with The Grand Budapest Hotel in 2014. Structured as a story within a story within a story, the film centers around Monsieur Gustave, played by Ralph Fiennes, the fussy, seeking perfection at all times concierge of a legendary establishment called the Grand Budapest Hotel, which is located not in Hungary, surprisingly, but in the fictional East European country of Zubrowska. The movie follows the adventures of Gustave and the young bellboy he takes under his wing. The film is inspired by the writings of Stephen Zweig, with whom Wes Anderson shares screenplay credits. And all of the usual Anderson actors show up here, along with a bunch of new ones. And I have literally 6 lines of names of actors in this movie. So here we go. Tilda Swinton, Adrian Brody, Willem Dafoe, Harvey Keitel, Jude Law, F. Murray Abraham, Bill Murray, Edward Norton, Saoirse Ronan, Jason Schwartzman, Tom Wilkinson, Leah Seydoux from Blue is the Warmest Color, Matthew Amalric, Owen Wilson, and newcomer Tony Revolori.
Ralph Fiennes.
And Ralph Fiennes, I mentioned, of course, who plays the lead role. So quite a cast, quite a movie. I watched it just last evening, so it's fresh in my mind and can't wait to discuss it with you guys. What do you guys think of The Grand Budapest Hotel?
So we'll sandwich Joe because I can imagine what he's going to say. So let's start with me first. So I think Wes Anderson is probably the most stylish director out there today. This film is a feast for the eyes and a pleasure to watch, even if it is a little light on story. If Wes Anderson was a handbag or an item of clothing, I would totally fill my wardrobe with him. I love this movie.
So I'm not the hugest fan of the Wes Anderson aesthetic. I think his movies have this wonderful visual style, but I think after about 15 minutes or so, I start to find it to be a bit of a distraction because everything is composed just so. If you're a photographer, you'll know about the rule of thirds, and this movie has it in every single frame. Not some frames, not when needed by the story, but in every single shot. And it's a very effective and a very enjoyable movie, to be honest. I enjoyed this a lot more than I was expecting to, given the fact that I'm not a fan of his aesthetic. But he needs to rein it in a little bit, if you ask me. I think this is this is Wes Anderson on steroids. He's really gone to town in this movie. He's amped everything up to 11. And if you're a fan of this aesthetic, you will be like a pig in poop. If you're like me, not so much. But it's still a very worthwhile effort to go see.
So I need to see it again because I saw it in a sort of a sleep-deprived mode. This was my 4th or 5th movie that I was watching over the weekend. So I love Wes Anderson. I love that there is somebody so unique and so altogether, you know, like him. I mean, you watch like 3 minutes of the movie and every composition is so fussily made, you know, and with these tracking shots, and there is a overindulgence by the minute that nobody else but him could do it. So I appreciate that. But it's exactly the point that you said, Rashmi, that it's really light on plot. It just seems like a caper. I mean, at any minute they're thinking, now what other stupid, silly, out of the ordinary thing can these characters do? So it almost seems like the story's been written on a lark. So as visually amazing as it is, it came off kind of very light and souffle-like. It didn't fill me. So it visually filled me, but I didn't come off feeling any kind of emotional connection, but I didn't even feel like when what should have felt like a big feast felt just like, you know, like I got two teaspoons of a dessert.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you compare it to the emotional depth of something like the Darjeeling Express
or even Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah. Or even Moonrise Kingdom, or you compare it to the very smart and witty, talented Mr. Fox, you know, I can see that if you're not a Wes Anderson fan, then you're going to come away feeling like, God, what is all the big deal about? But for me, I just love that aesthetic. I love that each frame is like a photograph. I love the vivid color. Nothing is an accident. Mm. This is playful and quirky and smart and witty. And it's exactly what you said. It's a comical caper of sorts. But I think if you were to look at the whole movie, it's more like a comic book than a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt very in much. Some ways that's a good point, it could have been like an animated movie.
Right.
It felt like that. And I think he borrowed visually from The Fantastic Mr. Fox more than any of his other movies.
It's made him a better director, I think, making an animated movie. Yeah.
Well, he says that, but I don't believe it has. I mean, I think he's taken those same techniques and he tries to throw them into this world, and it all comes across as far too cutesy and far too forced. And I think that's ultimately my issue with the movie is, you know, it's so much style over content that he got carried away with, I think, how this movie looks. He has his same actors, and it's a fine band of actors that, you know, they have there indeed. But we were at his opening at South by Southwest where he, you know, it almost felt like it was a case of let's get the band back together again, right? Mm. Let's do this thing. We'll set up a hotel. It was set up in Budapest. I think they did actually film on location in Hungary for bits of it. But, you know, it was like, you know, let's get our friends in. Let's make another movie and let's have a bit of a blast doing it. And I think he lost. This movie's reviewed very well. And you know, I think it's more positive reviews rather than great reviews. And I think that's how I feel. It's just too playful.
I agree, but I think it's worth watching just for Ralph Fiennes' amazing performance. So let's, you know, this, he basically carries the movie and he is amazing as this character. I mean, clearly this role, and we know that the role was written for Ralph Fiennes specifically. It's a very difficult role. He's so nuanced. I mean, I just want to watch that performance again because it's beautiful. I also want to watch the film again because I feel like we were so dazzled by all of the imagery we've missed some of the subtext that's coming across. But I mean, let's just even think about the ad campaign. We as MovieWallers started receiving calendars way back in December, and let's not, you know, the beautiful box of macarons that arrived.
With Mandel's, yeah.
From Mandel's, right? With just beautiful. I mean, I wish I hadn't thrown out the box now. But, I mean, just lovely. I mean, there's a lot of... They made it very real for us. Let's just say that.
That's just good PR.
It's good PR,
but not everyone does it, right?
But it's not cheesy.
But I don't think that's him doing it.
It's not cheesy PR, right?
It's not cheesy. It was very good quality.
I think it's PR that comes from the fact that this is such a visual movie that there are lots of opportunities to take that unique look and feel and, you know, and exploit that in all the marketing.
Yeah.
Because,
and it was an experience.
Because it's almost...
Yeah.
There's no other movie that you could market with a perfectly packaged box of macaroons, right? But this one was absolutely appropriate. And even more so once you've seen the movie.
Right. And I felt like it was all part of the experience.
Yeah.
We got to experience how wonderful the Grand Budapest Hotel would have been in its heyday.
Let that not bias you, because most of the people listening to the podcast won't have a clue about those macaroons.
No, I'm not saying, of course, I'm just saying that...
We could have even tweeted them, but we didn't get a chance.
Of course, but what I'm saying is that This to me feels more like an experience than a movie in a sense.
It is an experience. I mean, I think minute by minute, every scene in the movie is an artifice. There is nothing remotely realistic about any point in the movie. I mean, from the costumes to the production design to the way there's a scene where the bad guy is being followed by the good guys on a sled. And it looks completely like a comic book, and it's intentional. There are scenes where there is this funicular which is bringing people up and down from the Budapest Hotel. That is not even remotely trying to look realistic. So I think he's...
It's like a pencil drawing.
Yeah,
almost.
He has such a hard-on with the art design that he can't get past it. And he's so in love with the little world he's creating and the little pieces he's made that he can't... And
that's where I think he needs to be reined in.
But
if he wants to be a great filmmaker, I think he needs to check that at the door and focus on more than just the aesthetic.
But that's what makes him exceptional, I think.
He's an artist, and I respect that this is his art style, but I think he's got this cult following, right? And I think for him to break out of that, you know, this movie was a good step. I mean, as a non-Wes Anderson fan, I think I enjoyed this movie a tremendous amount. But I think for him to transcend that and step into kind of a more mainstream, like a Tarantino, you know, a director that everyone universally accepts is a great director. I feel he's got to just rein himself in a little bit. And I think all this movie needed was a little less of that and a little more plot and a little more, you know, attention to you know, the film goer's experience, because it just felt like he was having too much fun making it.
I mean, it's a very simplistic story. Mm-hmm. It's basically fairly linear too, which is, you know... Yeah, but it's fine. I think we would have been bedazzled and our heads would have exploded if there was both in this, because the imagery is so amazing. I mean, I would recommend that people see this just because the imagery is just stunning.
Right. There's, I mean, just a simple scene of, and it's in a lot of their marketing. It's a scene of people in an elevator.
Yes.
I mean, it's red on red on red.
And then purple.
And purple. It just hits you on the face. I mean, you know, somebody has worked.
And they created all of this, right? They actually created this apparently. So I watched a making of this movie, and apparently they went into a place which is actually now a big shop, a department store, and they've actually created the hotel within that department store. They made the corridors, they made the elevator, they made the suites with the rooms. Everything was actually made, and then the entire cast stayed here.
Wow. I mean, you know, I mean, something, my favorite Wes Anderson movie is Rushmore. And that movie had a sadness to it, an emotionality to it. And I think the more visually fussy that Anderson is getting, the less emotionally grounded he's getting. So I think he needs to find that middle ground.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, I enjoyed it. It was just a visual feast, but I wish it had meant, you know, more to me. And the only other complaint I had about the movie is, I mean, people are so in love with everything Wes Anderson that cast members show up for virtually doing nothing, just standing there for a line. I mean, there's Bill Murray has two lines. Owen Wilson is barely there. Jason Schwartzman is barely there. Tilda Swinton, God knows what she's doing in that movie, although she's fun. But, you know, it's amazing that he can call these big name actors for virtually doing nothing.
I mean, it's literally like spot the actor.
And, you know,
but if you got that call, wouldn't you go? I'd be there in a second.
But I wouldn't waste Bill Murray. Go on.
We saw the premiere at South by Southwest, even though it was a premiere that came after the movie was already released in screens. But the lines for this movie were insane. I mean, we were there 2 hours, I think, before the movie, and we barely got in. Mm. The line behind us went around several blocks. I mean, it was absolutely insane. But it was
one
of
the most overprescribed movies ever, I think.
But it was a really good, fun experience being part of that audience, and that audience cheers when an Anderson stalwart appears. So, you know, he throws them in. I think they all just want to be in his movies. I think the experience of the filmmaking and the overall product, they're just proud to be associated with it. So yeah, they will show up to be in a picture frame on somebody's desk if that means being in the movie versus not being in the movie. And the audience loves it. I mean, you know, when Bill Murray showed up, enormous applause. When Owen Wilson showed up, everyone was like, yeah, you know, and I was like, why are they clapping? He's like, he was flashed on screen for half a frame, it felt like.
Right.
Okay, let's wind this one up. So, Yasti, why don't you go first?
So I think as Wes Anderson movies go, this one is very prototypical Wes Anderson. In fact, like you said, Joe, it might even be, you know, up to notch if that was possible. This might be the most Wes Anderson films of all of his movies. I enjoyed it visually. I do want to see it again because, like I said, I saw it in a sort of sleep-deprived state. I give it a 7 out of 10.
I enjoyed this so much more than Moonrise Kingdom. I think that movie was a movie that I didn't find offensive, but I just didn't love that movie, I think, the way that many people did. And I think it was nominated that year, right, as Best Picture?
Yeah, it had some
nomination. I think it was one of the Best Picture nominees. But anyway, this was more fun than that, but a little too much fun. It was madcap and zany all the way through, and I think that's what he was going for here. But and I can see why his fans would like that too. But like I say, Wes Anderson, just you can be great. You can win me over. Just don't distract me with every frame being composed like it was a painting, because that ultimately, I think it's there is too much of a good thing. And instead of paying attention to what's going on in your movie, I'm looking at where everything's placed in the frame. And I think, you know, ultimately to me, that was a distraction. Anyway, 8 out of 10, which is a very generous score. But I did actually enjoy this in the moment way, way more than I thought I would.
So interesting that you use the word painting, because the movie is about a painting, really, at its core. So interesting. Look, I'm completely unobjective. So I love Wes Anderson. I love this movie. I loved my stay at the Grand Budapest Hotel. And I can't wait to see it again, because I'm sure there's tons I missed. This is made for me. 9 out of 10.
Really?
I loved it. I had this huge smile on my face the whole way through the movie. And I hate to call it so early, but I think Ralph Fiennes is Oscar-worthy. Oscar-worthy performance here. It's such a good performance. It's such a complete character that we've never seen before and was so enjoyable to watch. And the dialogue was amazing in this movie.
Although a little too much of a cartoon character for me to be really, truly a great performance. It was very stylized.
Very, very stylized.
And the other thing
that... But well realized, I think. Go on.
The other thing that, as Techwala, really, really great for me was that most of the movie was shot in this 4:3 aspect ratio. I love widescreen. This is going to look like ass when I get it home and we watch it on TV.
Unless they do a different version.
On our HD TV, which if they did, would be a real stick in the eye to his aesthetic, because he's done this deliberately. He wanted it to have this look. So I think for them to kind of do any kind of stretching or, you know, screen filling. But to me, that was just like, I wouldn't mind using it for parts of the movie where it was necessary, but it was used for extensive amounts of the movie. And I think, again, he's the director. He gets to make that choice. But I don't think that that's visually best for the audience. It's a very bold move to do that. And only he could get away with it. But
so definitely one you should see at the cinema then.
But if you are going to see it, it was irritating to me at the cinema too. I mean, to be honest, to find that, you know, 2/3 of the screen was just black.
I didn't even notice.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So things like that bug me, but...
It's a very filmy film. You know what I mean? It's like a film lover's offering to all things film-like. Oh. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what he was up to here. But, you know, it's too Wes Anderson.
Yes.
All right, said my piece. Melon Movie Rollers. Oh,
no.
There's one more to go, Joe. Not so fast.
I know, right. Let's move into our next movie of the week, which is The Lunchbox.
So The Lunchbox was widely considered to be the likely submission from India for the 2013 foreign film to the Academy Awards. But it strangely got passed over for another film. This is the first full-length film from Ritesh Patra, and it's set in the world of Mumbai Dabbawalas, which is a network of people that deliver more than 1 million lunch boxes from home to offices every day with nary a mistake. And there have been many documentaries made about this extremely efficient system, and you know, people from MIT have gone and visited it just to study the logistics of how this is managed. Well, this film is based on one such rare mistake within the Dabbawalas, which results in a lunch packed by a young housewife for her husband getting mistakenly delivered to an older man. They start exchanging notes through their lunch boxes, which leads to the development of an unlikely friendship between these two characters. The film stars the incomparable Irfan Khan, the relative newcomer Nimrat Kaur, as well as Nawazuddin Siddiqui, who has yet to fail to amaze me as an actor in every movie I've seen. The story is also credited to Ritesh Patra. I am dying to see this movie. I'm, you know, I had to make a choice and could not attend the screening. So I'm really curious to hear what you guys thought about this.
So we'll be very careful to not give you any spoilers here, because this movie is spoilable. So we need to be careful.
Yeah, I'm really keen for you to see it, Yazdi. And of course, you've even been a recipient of the Dabbawalas, right?
I grew up at school getting lunch from the Dabbawalas, you know. And the good thing
I'm so jealous, and by the way.
The good thing about the Dabbawalas is they deliberately, they don't show up at 9 in the morning or 10 in the morning. They deliberately will come as late as they can so that the food is hot when they take it from home and it's delivered in as short a period of time to the recipient as possible.
So for those who don't know what a Dabba is, it's a tiffin box, right? So correct. You get like 3 layers or 4 layers of food.
Right.
And it gets delivered to your destination.
To the office or to school or wherever. And it's a remarkable system. They use, you know, if anybody's ever in Mumbai, I would recommend around lunchtime to get on the main trains. And you will see these stacks and stacks and stacks of boxes being carried. The trains will stop for 5 to 7 seconds. Everything gets miraculously dropped. Things go in. It's like clockwork.
And your lunch was always delivered.
It was. I've never to date not received my lunch on time.
Well, I think their hit rate is remarkable. It's like high 90s% of, right. You know, it's a very small fraction of a percent, I think, that don't get delivered.
Okay, so that aside, which is fascinating, and it's worth watching the movie just for that. This is a really unlikely story with so much depth and emotion. And more importantly, for me, it was how we can find solace and comfort in a situation or people that we never thought was even possible. I was really hungry during and after this movie, and the food looked amazing. But more importantly, I loved this movie. This is one of my favorite movies of the year so far.
So whoever was responsible for this not being submitted to the Oscars needs to have their passport removed and get themselves kicked out of India, because you've really done your country a disservice here. This movie was so subtle, so well judged, so restrained in its delivery, because there are so many decisions that were made, and I really want to be super careful about not giving any plot spoilers away here, but it was so well judged in terms of how it delivered its story, in terms of where it took the story, where it took the characters, because it could have so easily gone into rom-com or melodrama territory, and it didn't, and it managed to keep that restraint all the way through, and that enabled us as the viewer, I think, to engage with the movie and these characters in a way. I mean, you know, the lead character, Irfan Khan.
Oh, man. He's God. He's
amazing. Yeah.
He doesn't say very much. I mean, this isn't a verbal role. A lot of his scenes are done with absolutely no dialogue whatsoever. The director has done a fantastic job of setting up the scene. And he does a perfect job of just acting facially. And we know everything that's going on within the scene. So it's a very gentle movie. But it's a movie that is made so much more effective by not being in your face. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, people always say that, you know, you're not made for cinema. Meaning, you know, only the pretty and the good-looking people should. And they should. But Irfan Khan is a great example of the camera never loves him. There's nothing remotely lovely about his face.
He's so honest. Face.
But it's a face which is always authentic.
Yeah.
You know, in movie after movie.
Yeah.
I don't want to imagine a world without him as an actor.
I mean, he's in one of my favorite movies, which is The Namesake, which we've spoken about a lot on the podcasts. He's phenomenal in that movie. But yes, believe it or not, he's even more phenomenal in this one. And it's great to see that he's actually carrying the movie, because he's the main, you know, one of the main protagonists. What I also love about this movie is it shows a very modern Mumbai in many ways. And of course, it shows this amazing tiffin process, which we've talked a little bit about. And that's an incredible story within itself. But I think for me, having grown up in an Indian household, it really showed the ritual of cooking an Indian meal and the importance of food in an Indian family. And that's not something light. It's a very ritualistic process. Mm-hmm. And it's a very important part of the day. And yes, you and I always joke about, you know, the day before you're already worrying about what you're having for lunch tomorrow or the, you know, dinner the next day.
Your day literally revolves around food.
And who's going to come and join you for it, right? But I think the other thing for me is, Joe, you said it's subtle, sweet, and tragic all at the same time. And we cover so much about attitudes in India today about age, relationships, religion, hierarchy. And although it had that sweetness of kind of like, you've got mail, the similarity stopped there, I think. You can't call this an Indian, you've got mail. It's very, very different. But how exciting to get a tiffin of delicious food every day. I can't get over that.
True. Well, you know, somebody has to cook it for them to bring it. But yes.
Yeah, I mean, you can see where the idea came from. And I think it was very much like the You've Got Mail, except, you know, it's more like you've got lunch, you know, and then the way that they build upon that for these characters to kind of communicate within their universe, and it's very nicely done. I mean, I think the only real criticism I have of the movie is that perhaps a lack of knowledge of the Indian culture and some of the things you mentioned, Rashmi, you really have to infer that. I know that, you know that, because of our, you know, exposure to Indian culture. But I think some of the non-Indian filmgoers really, I think, were a little puzzled by some of the things that were going on there. And yes, it does paint a very modern picture of Mumbai, but it doesn't do anything to really explain a lot of things that are happening in the movie. Like, I really think that a couple of minutes, because the movie's got a pretty long running time, but I think a couple of minutes just spent explaining the mechanics of these tiffin boxes being transported around Mumbai would have helped the audience's understanding, because I really appreciated what was going on here, and that the fact that this delivery error was a very unique thing. You know, to anyone else watching the movie, it just looked like, you know, another lunch got delivered to the wrong place. So those are just like minor little nitpicks, but I mean, it just, you know, again, nothing more to add in terms of you know, it was just so confidently directed. And you can tell a movie is confidently directed when the opening shot is of a railway, a bunch of trains, and the camera just holds. And there's nothing there to kind of lead you into the story, other than this immediately creates a feeling of place and time, and the movie begins there, but it holds for like 30 seconds or maybe even a minute. And I was like, you know, what an interesting thing to show me here, because this isn't the beginning of a movie. This is just putting me there. This is like, you know, I'm going to leave you there for a bit and you're going to figure out where it is that you are.
Yeah.
Really confident direction.
Yeah.
How amazing that this is their first film. I mean, I really think this is the golden era for Indian cinema. There's just amazing movies coming out of India right now. Go on.
No, I would just say, you know, for me, it transcended being an Indian movie. It's not really an Indian movie. This is a movie that transcends any culture, race or culture. It's just a beautiful film about people. And I don't even want to say, I wanted to say something, but I think it might be a spoiler.
Yeah, don't.
But I won't even bother. Just watch this movie. I mean, I had obviously been lucky enough to see a copy of the film, The Good Road, which actually did make it in as the Oscar nomination for India. And, you know, having seen both, I'm with you, Joe. I mean, the reason apparently this wasn't submitted was that it had got a lot of great press coming out of all of the film festivals last year. And the board who actually choose the films for the Oscars basically said, well, given it's getting so much good press, it's obviously not Indian enough, which is such a mistake. But I'm so happy it's got a main release. I've been waiting for this film to come. I'd heard such good things about it. I just love this movie.
Because it's relatively rare even now for Indian movies to break into the foreign cinema circuit here. And I think Sony Pictures releasing when was the last time you saw an Indian movie at the Landmark Cinemas? It's been a long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm glad that an American distributor has taken it up and is releasing it within the, you know, Landmark circuit.
So should we score this one?
Yes.
Go ahead, Joe.
I mean, I think you know that this is heading for a 9 out of 10 just from what I've said. So, you know, my score's right there. But, this is just a beautifully done, you know, at its core, it's kind of a will-they-won't-they movie. But don't think too much about that while watching it, because if you do, you can pick a couple of holes in the plot that are annoying. So just enjoy it for what it is. Watch it, watch the performances, watch the direction, pay attention to those kind of things and just have a wonderful time at the movies with this. It's hard to not give it a universal recommendation, but I would say if you're going to go into it, if you can do anything you can to educate yourself a little about tiffin boxes and mechanics of Indian lunches and that kind of stuff, do so. But I mean, it won't detract seriously from the movie without that. Go see it.
Score, 9?
9 out of 10, yeah. Wow. 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm like this close to giving it a 10. But this is a perfect non-Hollywood, non-Bollywood film. I don't know how to describe it any other way. It's just a perfect movie. This will warm your heart and stay with you for a long, long time. And, oh, just stunning, stunning. 9 out of 10. I feel like 9 is doing it an injustice, but
yeah.
It's not quite 10, but it's very close. It's if we hard. Had halves today, I would use my 9.5.
Wow.
I hope we haven't built you up too much on this, but go see this movie. You missed a treat.
I can't wait. And it opens soon.
Yes, opening next weekend, I think.
Excellent.
All right, well, let's bring our episode to a close. mail@movieworlders.com. Let us know what you think of these movies if you get a chance to see them. Let us know what you think of our reviews. Tell us if we stink or if you're enjoying the show. We'll happily make changes if enough of you ask, or we might just ignore you and put you on email ignore. Twitter.com/movieworlders. Facebook.com/movieworlders as well. Until our next episode, it's too many movies and too little time. A very good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.